Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
In the spirit of reconciliation, the Swapcast acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respect to the elders, past and present, and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today.
We're talking again
about body swapping.
Welcome to the Swapcast podcast, the world's only podcast dedicated to body swap movies. I'm your host, Paul Mitzi, and with me we have...
Brendan Levi.
Lucy is busy moving house this week, so we are lucky enough to once again be joined by the host of Hunting Seasons, Broderick Gordas. Hey, Brod.
Hi, Paul. How you doing? Hey, Brendan. Hey,
great. How's going? That only took one take.
No fuck-ups. Perfection.
In today's episode, we'll be breaking down the 2012 Pixar film, Brave, featuring the voices of Kelly MacDonald, Billy Connolly, and Emma Thompson, where a Scottish princess uses a witch's curse to turn her mother and three brothers into bears to avoid an arranged marriage. But before we get into that, just a reminder that we absolutely love hearing from our listeners and we welcome film suggestions for future episodes. So please reach out to us on Twitter or Instagram, send us an email at theswapcastpodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to support our show, reviewing us is the best way possible. So to say thank you, if we reach 100 star ratings on iTunes and Spotify, we will finally fulfill our fans' most common request to review Face Off. So... on to Brave. This was famously one of Pixar's most troubled productions, with the company's first ever female director being kicked off the project halfway through. 10 years later and away from the controversy, does Brave deserve a place among the best the company has produced?
No, it does not, which is a real shame. I was looking back. I was trying to remember where this came into the chronology of Pixar films. And I don't know if you know this, Paul and Brendan, but I was on a game show with Pixar as my special subject once upon a time, which was all about covering the first 10 movies in Pixar's lineup, basically. Yeah. I think it went all the way up to Toy Story 3 and maybe a little bit further. I mean, 12 movies. Anyway, that was an incredible run of films that they had. Like, they were just unstoppable at that point. Even films like Cars or A Bug's Life, which maybe get considered sort of the weaker entries, I still think were pretty bloody good. Then after Toy Story 3, they had Cars 2, which is awful. And then they followed that up with Brave, which is probably the most meh film amongst their catalogue, I think, up to that point at least. Definitely on the weaker end. I remember looking forward to it. Again, as someone who was sort of a big fan of Pixar and... like the idea of like a Scottish fairy tale, the introduction of Pixar's first Disney princess. We've talked about my lack of redheads in previous podcasts as well. So that certainly helped. Scottish accent always helps. And I was looking forward to this in a big way. And I did hear about its troubled production history, but still went in excited because just Pixar hadn't missed much up to that point apart from Cars 2. I don't know. It's just like missing that Pixar magic, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I was watching it and I think I remember liking it a bit more when I watched it at the cinemas. But now, 10 years later, where the animation is...
shows its age.
It's showing its age. It doesn't have that wow factor of the animation anymore. And so you really have to be looking into the story and the characters, and there's a lot missing there. Like, it just feels very surface level, doesn't feel like there's any depth to it. And I feel like the comedy and the comic timing and the pacing just felt very manic and not funny.
I'd argue it's sort of closer to maybe what I expect for something like DreamWorks at the time.
Yes.
And even, I think, timing-wise, might have come out a similar time as, like, How to Train Your Dragon, which I think is DreamWorks' best animated movie. And, like, I love that film. It's got some Scottish elements to it as well. It's got that sort of Vikings barbarian feel to it as well. Mm-hmm. And that outclasses Brave, even though it's maybe not as... Oh, you know, in some parts it is as beautiful as Brave. Yeah, it's just missing something.
So, yeah, I think How to Train Your Dragon is a better film in every level than this.
The score, the production values, the story, all of it.
Yeah.
Like, do you know much about the background? Because you mentioned that the director was, like, kicked off of it. Like, what's... Like, I feel like I've... Because I also did the sort of research that I usually do, which is, like, read one or two things, you know, at a cursory glance. I'm like, Paul, it's Pixar. Paul will know everything. Like, do you know what happened? Like,
I think Pixar to this day haven't really revealed exactly what happened.
I'm not familiar with what happened either.
Yeah. All we know is, like, they made a big deal about the fact this was, you know, Pixar's, because this was, like, the first Pixar film with a female main character, right?
And then, female, like, title character. She's not even the title character, I guess. I mean, they've had female main characters in, like, Dory and Finding Nemo, I guess, and The Incredibles. But, yeah, I get certainly the female-centric, we'll say.
Yeah, the first film to be centered around a female character, and they made a big deal that they were getting a female director for it. And then halfway through, then they announced, oh, wait a second, she's not going to be doing it anymore, and was... downgraded to co-director because she had done so much in the pre-production stage and was basically kicked off and replaced by someone else.
Fascinating, though, I think about how Pixar films are made. If you look at how they're made, it's not like, I suppose, animated films in general, but I'm more familiar with the Pixar way of doing it, is that, like, with a feature film, a live action film, although this is changing a little bit now with reshoots and stuff, the way they do, like, tentpole films for Marvel and stuff, it's like, you have the script, you do the pre-production, you shoot it, and then you edit it. And that's, like, as simple as it is, right? But Pixar have this thing. If you watch, I think the WALL-E documentary is really interesting on how they made that movie. And, like, from conception through to even as they are animating the film, they are still sort of tinkering with the story. And there are major beats in that film that got changed late in the game. We're not talking about WALL-E. But, yeah, basically they're still changing that on the fly, right? Mm. Which it's interesting that if this film was going so poorly, they didn't have the confidence in the director to pull that together. And I think the way the film kind of feels, I mean, it's not quite 90 minutes. The credits roll at the 84-minute mark. It's one of the shortest Pixar films, I think, aside from maybe the first Toy Story. Mm-hmm. It feels like there's both, it takes too long to get to the body swap, and then not enough is happening. Like, it's too slow and too fast. It's really, really weird. It's just so poorly paced. It's kind, as you said, it's got no depth to it. It's like they just couldn't, like, pull it together, I feel like, and they just sort of, I don't know. It's so strange.
I think what you're describing is a body swap film.
we
don't have any depth or any story, so let's just take a formula that's tried and true and stuff it into a kids' film. Like,
yeah, but I mean, like, we've seen, like, literally this exact same situation in
Brother Bear,
where
sure,
that film's far from perfect, but I feel like that did a lot more thematically,
charming, a lot more.
Yeah, like, and it explored the body swap more as well.
And Pixar has since done Turning Red, which
and Soul.
I fucking love. And Soul. Soul takes a long time to get to the body swap too, though. Mm. But, you know, thematically rich as a film. Yeah. Whereas,
well, let's be honest, like, Paul really shoehorns these ones in because he wants to talk about Pixar and Disney.
Well, maybe with Soul, but certainly Turning Red is a body swap film. And this one is too. But it doesn't do the work with it, I don't think. It's very, very strange. I don't know where this went wrong at a script level. Maybe as a director, they just weren't getting the work done by the team of animators and stuff like that done. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was happening too slowly, or the work that was being greenlit or produced by ticked off by the director wasn't up to snuff with the people above at Pixar. Don't know. Just don't know.
Yeah. Well, so I'm guessing, Brendan, you haven't actually said what did you think of the film?
I'm pretty much on I was surprised. I was expecting you guys to love it because it's Pixar and stuff. But yeah, no, I definitely feel like the story is what drags it down. And yeah, it, particularly the body swap element of it is unfortunately very plain and very unnecessary. Like, it's like, this didn't need to be a body swap film. It could have been anything else. And I think that's probably a good time for you to actually go through the storyline since we're, you
yeah,
know,
sure.
going to dive into that, right?
Yeah. Do you want to set the timer?
30 seconds.
So, for those unfamiliar, this is our 30-second plot summary where I try to sum up the plot of Brave in 30 seconds on the fly. I don't always make it. Well, I rarely do make it in 30 seconds. So, we'll see if this will be...
I reckon you can do this one.
Yeah.
I reckon it's that shallow that you'll actually get this in 30 seconds.
Yeah.
All right. You ready?
Yeah.
And go.
So, there's a Scottish princess. Her parents want her to get married because it's the tradition. She doesn't want to. So, she goes to a witch who gives her a magic cake that she gives to her mother. And that turns her mother into a bear. And then her brothers also eat the cake. And then her and the mother go on an adventure to try to change her back. And then they change her back and they realize that they, you know... misunderstood each other the whole time.
I mean, that's basically it.
Yeah, that's
the,
it, yeah.
The problem with that bit, the bit that I think is really missing from this movie is when you say they go on an adventure, right? Mm-hmm. It's like once she gets, the mother gets turned into the bear, A, thematically, is a bear the right choice? Like, what's, why is the bear the thing you turn into?
It's completely, like, arbitrary and random.
It doesn't have, they build in the themes of, like, the bear with Muldoon, or whatever his name is, the previous guy from the fairy tale or whatever who turned into a bear because had the same, basically, spell from the witch. But, like, it doesn't come with any...
It's basically
it doesn't make sense
a witch who has one trick.
Yeah, and that's the idea. Like, it's like, I turn things to bears. Great.
It's like, hi, I came for a, I want some medicine to make me as strong as a bear. She's like, great, I've got just the thing. And then someone comes in and is like, hi, I'd like to be,
really, change my mum.
I'd like a new head of hair. It's like, I've got just the thing. Like, everyone always says something that just seems to work for the bear version.
But then once she turns into the bear, they get her out because she's in danger by being there. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of go fishing.
Yeah.
And then they follow the Will of the Wisps to find out.
And
the
sometimes
the Muldoon guy had
becomes
been-
a bear. She like.
Oh, sometimes she comes. Becomes
like her eyes roll back. She goes into the sunken place.
Yeah.
And an actual bear is like running her body for a bit.
It tends to be when she's eating food, I noticed as well. But anyway. And then they go to the place. They find out that Muldoon had the same curse. She figures out, I got to mend the thing, the tapestry. They have to sneak back into it. She has that moment, I guess, where she's like, I don't want to do this. And the mum agrees because she's decided that that's good now. And then they mend the tapestry, get her out, fight the bear, and then she turns back because she says sorry too. I'm really not sure what the message or the perspective of this film is. I guess the idea is they're both meant to be wrong, but yeah, I really feel like the mum was way more wrong. Does that make sense?
I don't know. I disagree.
So you think, Brendan, that Merida,
she had a duty.
The princess,
like,
should be marrying someone she doesn't love for the duty of her kingdom?
Yeah, I'm saying we can
the stance
either,
you're taking.
As a society, we can either live in a state of chaos or we can live with some sort of like law and order.
So you're pro monarchy. You're not interested in a republic in Australia as well.
Well, I'm saying if you're like
did some morning at 11 a.m. on Thursday.
If you've got like two options, you've got like just these people like breaking into like absolute chaos, or like some sort of like, you know, we wouldn't be in the society we're in today without the, you know, going from like monarchies to it's a rich tapestry of like, you know. Anyway.
I think what these films...
That was a big bit, a long-running bit you had there, Brendan. Is that right?
I think the thing that these films kind of gloss over, especially the Disney films, for you know, a very obvious reason is that with these kind of arranged marriages, they were very often just for show, and these people would just be fucking whoever they want on the side.
I thought you were going to say it was the rape part because she's going to be with someone she doesn't want to be with. That was the bit they were glossing over.
No. I was going to say Merida, I'm sure she would have, you know, if she was forced into one of these marriages, she would have just put up with it, fuck some like gorgeous lesbian on the side, and then it would have been fine. Like she would have lived a happy life.
So, you know what? Society was perfect in the Middle Ages, and we should have just stayed there. Advancing society was a mistake. Good point, Paul. Good point. Yeah.
Like when I was watching this, I was really thinking about House of Dragons.
Sure. Yeah.
Because there's this whole like thing of her duty to marry off, you know, with one of the other houses to keep the kingdom in, like, check. And I was like, yeah, I agree. Then,
but, like, you know, there is a lot of dramatic tension and interesting stuff that could have been explored in that storyline that just the film wasn't interested at all. And I feel
they
like
they were more interested in stealing cakes for like 20% of the film, at least.
It just felt like this did feel like a film that was snatched away from whoever wrote it and directed it originally, and was like completely neutered, and just like everything kind of to the kid friendliest version of what it could possibly be, which isn't what Pixar always does. Pixar, the reason we love Pixar is because they do put so many themes in their films and make it appeal to just more than to the adults and the kids in the audience. This did not feel like that at all.
No, I completely agree. It's like you think of like Toy Story 4 is like, what's that a film about? That's a film about your kids growing up so you can go on and like figure out what your life is after your family has moved away. Like, that's kind of what that film is about. It's a film about, like, entering your 50s or 60s when you've got adult children now. I don't know. It's something like that. It's like, but it's still a kid's film. And this has just got no thematic depth whatsoever. And as you said, if it was at least more entertaining on, like, an action perspective or a comedy perspective or something like that, then that would be redeeming. But I don't think it's particularly... It tries to be funny, but I don't think the triplets are particularly funny. I don't think, is it Maud or whatever her name is, like the wet nurse or whatever?
Yeah.
The nanny, whatever, like whatever role she has. She's but, not, her screaming but is the not
kid,
funny.
But the kid falls in her titties. Isn't that funny?
you know what? Good point. No, the stuff with the three houses is tiresome because it's the same fucking joke over and over again. About them arguing the whole time. The same with the dad. It's just, as you said, it's just very one-dimensional.
As I said, there is a lot of stealing cakes.
There's a lot of stealing cakes.
To fill in time, yeah.
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 My question we move on, I just need to ask one thing. Why is it called Brave?
Because she is brave.
That's a good question. I think there was a bit in there about being brave. Only the bravest kings or whatever climbed the Firefalls. There was some other stuff in there about being, I don't know. I guess she's brave to speak her mind and be her own person. It's brave for the mother to admit fault. I don't know. Again, it's thematically not there.
Yeah. Was this, like, did this predate, like, Disney and Pixar naming all their films as like one word vague
it
titles
might have
like
been
Frozen
around
and
up came not up too far cars. Before that we've had Cars. I reckon really it was Tangled was the first one to do it, wasn't it? When did they come out? Tangled was 2010, so it's the same
same
year, I'm pretty sure.
Like I do like, you know, I am a Disney Pixar freak, but I do hate that aspect of the films that they all got these stupid titles like Tangled and Brave and Frozen and like,
yeah,
you can do better than that.
Sorry, Tangled's 2010 and Brave is 2012. Yeah, so 2 years up. Yeah. So it was right in the middle of it, basically. Yeah, those and what we've had onwards since Soul, it really became a thing, didn't it? It was just like about a branding exercise.
It's continuing to be a thing. Like Wish is coming out. Like
Red.
Red.
Wait, what was that film called that we watched?
Turning Red.
Turning Red. Gotcha. Okay.
So, yeah, in terms of a body swap kind of thing, it did you know, fulfill a lot of the cliches that we always see. We have a scene where somebody swaps and then looks into the mirror and screams. They managed to fit that one in, even though it's a bear doing it this time.
I reckon is a real weakness of the body swap and the animation of this film is I don't think the design of the mum is distinct enough that when she's a bear, it like is interesting enough. Does that make sense? Like,
yeah,
she's just got like the little white mark down the middle, which is like the white bit of hair she has in her hair. Compared to Merida and compared to her dad, the mum is just like not a particularly well-designed character. You know, the idea of like when you animate characters, their silhouette should be enough to be able to tell who they are.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true of Eleanor. And I don't think the bear is distinctly her. And I know they try and do that through like the mannerisms, the way she walks and tries to cover herself and all those sorts of things and be dainty. But it's like, I don't know. It's kind of a failure of the art form, I think.
We don't know enough about the mum as well. Like, yes. for it to be interesting when they swap. Like, the crux of a good body swap film is knowing the characters enough that when they swap, you know, you can see that in whatever they swap into.
Can I make a suggestion? One thing they could have done that might have made this film more successful is just if they had her still be able to talk as the bear, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when she becomes the bear. Right, when she goes into the sunken place, maybe obviously then she can't talk, and that's why Muldoon, his bear version, can't talk. He's too far gone. But by allowing her to express herself more fully as the bear, the body swap might have been more interesting than having to pantomime everything. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, I mean, looking down to like Brother Bear, that's kind of what they did. Like the human characters couldn't understand the bear, but we as the audience could. They were speaking English to us.
Sure.
And at least, yeah, that made it a bit easier to connect to them and their journey.
Also a waste of Emma Thompson when you're not letting her be, you know, do her job for half the film either.
Just Googling Emma Thompson.
Do you think it was her as the bear? Like
doing the grunts? Probably not, no.
Yeah.
Ah. Sorry.
Brendan doesn't know who Emma Thompson is
to see who she was.
that's just shameful, Brendan. I'm sorry.
Jesus Christ. So another body swap cliche that we got to see, which you mentioned earlier, was every body swap film has to have a montage. So this one had the fishing montage, which, yes, did feel completely arbitrary and like...
Well, it's the crux of why she changes their mind, because they literally don't do anything else besides go see Muldoon. So they have a fishing trip, like they have a day trip, and then that's all they needed to like basically completely change their minds. And you know, she's, you know, willing to let her daughter marry for love and such.
It's hard to understand how it ended up here, and that's why I'd be fascinated to know what the production history was. Like, it just doesn't seem like Pixar to miss this much. One of the things they've been so good at is telling relatively familiar and simple stories, but just the execution is so good. I just can't believe that the brains trust at Pixar looked at this and went, yeah, that's Pixar worthy. It's so strange. It's funny because I don't want to say this film is outright bad. It's just forgettable, I think. This is the second time I've ever watched it, and there's a reason.
Yeah, but I think the legacy of this film is actually become bigger than what it probably deserves. Like, there is a fervent fan base for this film. I just went to Disney World and Merida has her own meet and greet. And I, you know, went.
I imagine she's a very popular princess.
Yeah. Cause I went, cause I knew this episode was coming. I made sure I did that. So I'll put that on the socials so you can see me and Merida hanging out. But, it is a big deal that Disney decided to put her in their official lineup of Disney princesses, because not every character gets that. So they must have thought that there's a fan base enough to do that. She's the only Disney princess that's not from a straight Disney film in that lineup. So
is that the problem? Maybe was she designed as like a Disney princess first and then the movie built around her later? Because I think like as opposed to her mum, I think the silhouette of Eleanor is probably iconic enough. That beautiful, like big, flowing red hair that's just untamable. The green dress, that round face. I think there's a very, and then the idea that she's sort of that tomboy, very resourceful, self, you know, strong or whatever you want to call it. Like all of that I can see working for the character independent of the movie.
Yeah.
Which is probably where the fan base comes from. But inside the movie, it's just, well, the movie around the character just isn't there, I think.
Is this once Pixar was sort of eaten up by Disney? Like,
has this is a this while happened afterwards, I think. I think this is a while afterwards. Yeah. Because Toy Story 3 was that, this is after Toy Story 3, two films after Toy Story 3. And Toy Story 3 was one of those films that was like the threat against Pixar when Disney were going to make it themselves. And it wasn't until Pixar got bought officially that Pixar said, well, we're making that movie now, basically, and we're going to do it our way. I've seen the original pitches that Disney had for Toy Story 3, and it was going to be abysmal.
There was a bear in there.
there was a bear in Toy Story 3 in the real one. Lots of hugging. See, there.
I think that if this film was a actual part of the Disney lineup rather than the Pixar one, and they loaded it with songs, it may have been a better film. Like, because a lot of the time, those songs can do a lot in terms of patchwork for lack of character development and lack of story.
Because people can sing their feelings.
Yeah, people can sing their feelings. Give her a let it go. Like, you know, because there are a couple of songs in this film and they're fucking terrible. like, I could see a better version of this film where Merida's singing and there's big musical numbers.
Yeah, I could see that. I'm now thinking of Frozen, right? And, like, I don't think that plot is particular. I mean, it was kind of revolutionary at the time in the sense that it was like the most female empowered film that Disney had ever done. It was like almost a apology for the way that princesses had not been the real main characters of those stories, right? They made them finally they were empowered properly in that movie. And I could, and the music is a big part of why Let It Go, of why Frozen is so popular. Let It Go being the primary song. So you might be right about that. If you just loaded this with songs and like let those feelings come through in the most blatant and obvious way, but make them catchy and like memorable, you're probably right. It probably would hit a lot harder. I could agree. I see that.
So you just need a song about the witch and why she has an obsession with bears.
A great, not even a villain song, is it? But you could make it like a really, I'm thinking of like Shiny from Moana, like just a really catchy, like different sort of vibe song. Obviously, you've got your I Want song from Merida when she's climbing the Firefalls. You have whatever the Do You Want to Build a Snowman version of the song would be between, the mum. But that would be the mum and Merida song.
Yeah. And then like the scene where they go fishing could have been replaced by kind of a, you know, the song of Beauty and the Beast. Like, there's something there that wasn't there before.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah, you know, there's some movie that's, writes
well, that's
itself.
The montage, right? Yeah, totally. Really, really does. You have a fun song when, like, the different clans arrive about, like, talking that like goes through the Scottish history. You've got there's heaps you could do there. I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, once again, I don't know how much you know, but like, because usually Pixar scripts aren't they actually like written in-house rather than like someone's like, hey, I've got this script that and it sounds fresh, let's all make it. Like, they actually write their own things, right?
Yeah, it usually starts as a pitch and then it's kind of like a sitcom writing room where it's a whole bunch of people just like creating it together.
Like, I just see Disney as the enemy, so I'm just like, do you think they've like they sort of like, you know, had their little finger, they had their little spies like infiltrate that, and they're like, we need, like, you know, to make basically what you were saying about Frozen is like, oh, we need to like course correct, we need to have our, you know, strong powerful female, you know, story kind of thing, and then it wasn't, and tried to like basically Disney-fy it rather than take it in the direction that it was originally going in. You know what I mean?
I would argue my suspicion is it's the opposite. My suspicion is after Cars 2, they flinched, basically. And they were like, lost confidence in it because Cars 2 went so poorly. Mm. And then tried to course correct in-house and overcorrected.
Though, that being said, like, after Luca, it came out that Disney were interfering in a lot of creative decisions to kind of get rid of elements they found controversial in the films. So, who knows what kind of edgiest content might have been in this film that they decided to erase.
Do you feel like there's any part of this movie, though? With Luca, I can imagine what the edgier content might have been, right? It might have been a little more explicitly about, like, gay love, essentially, right? I can imagine maybe it was a little less, like, interpret as you want, a little more explicit, even still probably not outright saying it, but, you know, leaning into it more. Is there anything about Brave that makes you think there was something there that got cut?
Well, Paul assumes that she's lesbian.
Well, I mean, she is a lesbian icon at this point. Like, the lesbians have claimed Merida as their princess. So I could see a version where that would have been more explicit. They did say there were several Pixar projects where homosexuality was removed.
Right.
So, I mean, it does make sense. I mean, we'll get to it in the hot or not, but there was at least one viable option in those three that she could have been attracted to.
it's a real shame I don't have more to say about this movie.
Yeah.
Like, it is just so inert as to be. Like, it's not bad enough to have a lot to complain about. It's not good enough to have anything interesting to say about it.
I mean, we're going to rank this in terms of the body swap films we've done, but I'd be interested to see, like, I haven't really done a Pixar ranking, but I feel like this would be towards the bottom.
It's towards the bottom. There are worse. The Good Dinosaur and Cars 2 are outright awful, but this is not far above them, put it that way.
I remember Good Dinosaur probably being better on an animation level than this.
But it's gorgeous on an animation level, but I do wonder, again, I've seen that once because it was just so whatever.
Yeah.
I wonder if that still holds up. At the time, it was like breathtakingly photorealistic, but that was like 10 years ago now.
Yeah, I remember when this came out and I saw it being like, oh, well, like, that's crazy what they did with it. Because I feel like the hair, that was actually the real advance, like how it like Merida's springs.
Hair.
Yeah, how Merida's hair springs and it's got like the light coming through it and stuff like that. I think that was like for the time, like, crazy amazing hair, you know what I mean? And now it's just so like, oh yeah.
Finding Dory was also really average. Incredibles 2 was way super disappointing. It's a sequel to my favorite Pixar film of all time. I still haven't seen Lightyear.
See, I wonder, like, so, you know, we're watching this film and the animation kind of looks like ass now, and like, do you think the Pixar films from 2022 are gonna look like ass in 2033?
I don't think it looks like ass. I'll put it that way. I think
it feels too generic. Like, because I think it's more a character design thing. Well, even like the original couple of Toy Stories, even though they still have that sort of like clunky animation style of like we're still trying to get, you know, gravity and limbs and stuff. But like it still feels good. Like it feels.
Yes.
But that's also because the script in the characters are so good as well. Yeah. You can kind of overlook a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, but it also, like, I think Brave hasn't, like, it has in elements its own style, but really it just has that Disney generic look to what a lot of things are coming out now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, it feels like I'm playing around with the Disney filter. Like,
yeah. It doesn't have personality.
It's not distinct besides her hair.
yeah because you look at like 2D animation from any generation, like, you know, from the early stuff to the 80s and 90s, all of it, like, it all still holds up. It all still looks great, and CGI like just does not have that lasting factor at all. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what we think of this generation that we're currently in, what it will look like to us.
It's always the stuff that's trying to aim somewhere towards more realistic is the thing. And obviously, they're stylized, the characters. They're, except for Eleanor, I would argue, everyone else is sort of like, has proportions that are, you know, bigger than they should be and stuff like that. But, but anything that's like monsters and like, oh, they, to be fair, Bug's Life doesn't look very good, but toys, fish and so forth. I think that stuff's way more forgivable. It's when it's trying to be realistic or close to realistic. And as the technology advances, you look back and go, oh, that really doesn't hit the mark anymore. That's always the problem.
Yeah.
And with the 2D animation, it could never look realistic. It always had to look flat, right? It always had to look like a cartoon. And so it's always going to last longer because it's not getting anywhere near the uncanny valley. That's the other thing.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Come on, now. Pretend I'm Merida. Speak to me. What would you say?
I can't do this.
Sure you can. There, there. That's my queen. Right, here we go. I don't want to get married. I want to stay single and let my hair flow in the wind as I ride through the glen, firing arrows into the sunset.
You heard what we thought of the movie. But how attractive did we find the cast? Now it's time for Hot or Not. Take it away, me. Are they a toot or a boot? Are they ugly or cute? Tell me if they're hot or not.
Ding. Ding.
Everyone
is beautiful in their own way.
All right, let's talk about how much we want to fuck animated characters. So let's start off with our main girl, Merida, played by Kelly MacDonald. Hot or not?
I thought there was a rule on minors. She's 16 years old, mate.
Is she supposed to be 16?
I'm looking at the Wikipedia just to check that. Let me put it this way.
That tells you what Brod thinks.
Say no more. I'll put it this way. I've told you how I feel about redheads. I haven't told you until now how I feel about Scottish accents necessarily. I think the adult women that play Merida at Disneyland are very attractive. They are hot. Put it that way.
So, okay, as a 16-year-old, let's friend or foe her. Like, would you be friends with Merida?
I think so. She seems very fun. Like, she's, you know, adventuring and, you know, can shoot a bow and arrow like a boss. And I don't know. I don't see why I wouldn't be.
I feel like I'd be forced to, right? She's like the princess.
Yeah. Oh, no, you wouldn't be allowed to, Brendan. You're a peasant. You wouldn't be allowed anywhere near her.
Yeah, exactly. She's born into this life of privilege, and I'm just this woeful little, you know, farmer boy.
Is this the start of your sexual fantasy? I'm going to friend her. She seems like a fun time.
Yeah, she gets out. Like, she wasn't, like, spending her time, like, on the loom. She was out climbing mountains and shit. Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy hiking. I'm sure we could have a fun time.
You could drink from the waters of the firefalls, you know?
How about her mum? Was Eleanor, played by Emma Thompson, a MILF?
She just wasn't distinct enough. Like, I don't think she's unattractive, but she's not. There's only one bit at the end where she's got, like, her hair out, finally, when she's, like, transformed
and she's
back.
Naked. And she's naked.
And she's naked like a wee baby. I guess.
For me, I feel like I'm going to offend a lot of ladies out there, but like, the skunk.
We've come this far, Brendan.
The skunk, like, you know, the Mr. Sheffield streak of white through a lady's hair does nothing for me. I'm sorry.
The Pepe Le Pew.
Yeah.
No fan.
Like, a woman with white hair, that's cool. But just the skunk, the skunk line.
Wait. Do you think she deliberately dyed her hair that color?
Well, I don't know what the technology is.
I think she may have just been going white in that area.
Gracefully,
first.
Yes.
I think that's just disgusting. How it's going.
Well, I'm looking forward to Brendan's fanfic about her coloring her hair. yeah, I'm going to give her a notch. She's a stick in the mud.
Yes, that's true too.
Yeah, she didn't seem like she'd be fun to hang around. All she wanted to do was loom all day.
Keep a kingdom.
This is one of the few roles where I don't think Emma Thompson is hot, by the way. Mm. Even today, Emma Thompson is.
What's she been in?
What do you mean?
You're stalling, just like me. If foot to the fire, you don't know what she's.
Love Actually, Saving Mr. Banks, Cruella,
Harry
Potter.
Okay. So she's
She was back in the day. She was in some of the Jane Austen stuff too, wasn't she?
Yeah, Sensibility. Yes. So
she's a fucking. She's an international treasure. She's an icon. Oh my god!
I recognize the face when I googled it.
Oh my god! Thank god you're in Adelaide. I want to come over there and punch you in the face.
So there was three prospective suitors for Merida. So we had Lord McIntosh, the son of Lord McIntosh, the son of Lord MacGuffin, and the son of Lord Dingwald. So I'm going to do all three. So I would say Lord Dingwald, which was the short blonde one, was very much a knot.
Dweeb. Definitely not.
Yeah. Then there was Lord MacGuffin, who was like kind of the portlier one.
Chunky.
He's like buff.
Yeah. He would say strong. I wouldn't say buff.
Yeah, but like he also.
No, he's like 50s buff where like you could have a gut and.
Yeah.
You could, yeah.
Yeah. But he also had no like conversation skills. Like no one could understand anything he was saying.
That's right.
So I'm going to give him.
You could get a little bit from his nature that he seemed like.
Yeah. I mean, he does fulfill my brief of dumb. Dumb, which I do find attractive, as you know. But I am going to give him a not still. Lord McIntosh's son, he was hot. He was genuinely hot. He had a good rig on him.
He was an asshole, which is a tick for you as well.
Yeah. He was an asshole. That guy fucks. You know that guy fucks. So I'm going to give him a definite hot.
Now, see, he came across to me like more like one of those guys who thinks they're a player. Do you know? Yeah, like he's been looking up on how like to, what do they call it?
They're all glamour muscles. They're not from doing shit. Like that guy would be pummeled by Blondie.
Pummeled by Blondie. Yeah. Yeah, he's the one who's been reading up on how like to game women and stuff like that, and it's all it's all pretense. He's actually got no confidence, really. Mm-hmm. What's that guy? Is it Andrew Tate? He's been watching his YouTube series, I think.
Yeah.
So not from me. All three.
I thought you were saying you had, and I was like, oh, this is interesting. I want to see.
No,
this
I've not.
Finally, I can say my views.
Brendan, what do you think of the three guys?
All right. So I feel like this is a great like opportunity to play Marry, Fuck, Kill, right?
Yes.
So kill the pear shaped dude.
Yeah.
I can't remember the names. Was it McIntosh, the Andrew Tate guy?
Yes.
fuck him. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. I'd marry the bumbling, soft-spoken blondie, MacGuffin.
Yep. Yeah, that's probably a solid choice, actually. If with the marry, fuck, kill scenario, that's probably the correct choice.
Brave. She's involved, right? She's the firstborn of, I would marry her.
What?
Because she was.
No, you gave yourself three choices, mate. You gave yourself three choices.
You can't just have a fourth additional choice.
No, you set the terms. And you said, of the three, this is the perfect time to do Marry, Fuck, Kill. That's how the game works.
I was just doing what she was doing. You know how she saw a technicality in the rules of who could marry her, and so she took her own hand? I was... Never mind. All right. Yeah. Cut this.
Finally, we got Billy Connolly as Fergus, the dad.
I would have liked to have seen a young version of Lord Fergus. I reckon he would have
was
been...
Was it Billy Connolly doing his voice or an actor pretending to be Billy Connolly?
No, it was Billy Connolly.
Cool. I was just making sure. it's a shame. They should have given him some comedy to do.
Yeah. I think a young Fergus would have been a very attractive man. I'm not sure he still is.
I just feel like he would crush me. I feel like I would just be destroyed after.
You said there were some options for like lady options for Merida. Is that what you were saying? There was like
Not in the film that we saw.
Oh, I see. You're saying because she wasn't interested in any of the boys, that she must have been into girls.
She's got a whole kingdom of people that she could force to have sex with her. So that's how it used to
work. We're going back into House of Dragons territory. Yeah. Now, like the dad's all right. Like, I think he's done a lot with a guy whose mother must have been a cardboard box. He's just a cube. What the fuck?
A princess does not place her weapons on the table.
Mom, it's just my bow.
A princess should not have weapons, in my opinion.
Leave her be.
Now it's time for Opinion Swap, where we find some entertaining reviews of Brave from across the interwebs, but mostly letterboxed.
Let's not pretend.
This one's from Adam Parrish on Letterboxd, who gives it 2 stars, and he says... As someone who unfortunately lives in Scotland, this film really does a good job at what modern life in this country is like and the tragedies many of us face when a family member turns into a bear.
I didn't realize it was a documentary. That changes things.
Yeah, I wonder what like the Scottish community feels about this film. Like, do you think they'd be proud of it or... happy with this representation of their culture?
It is a lot of stereotypes, isn't it?
I wonder, like, you know, because now if they make a film about, you know, minority groups, they usually get consultants in to make sure that they're doing it right. I wonder if they bothered with the Scottish community.
Not with some of the classics, like, you know, if you get some Italians in there or some French people, you can just go, oh, it's fine. Yeah.
I feel like the casting was authentic. I mean, apart from... Yeah. Is Emma Thompson Scottish? I don't think so, but...
Kelly MacDonald is.
Kelly MacDonald is obviously Billy Connolly, Craig Ferguson. I assume most other people are.
First of all, redheads, isn't that like a recessive gene? So shouldn't she have been like brown like her mum?
No, that's not how it works. The dad's red, and if she's got the red... And she's Scottish, she's likely to have the redhead gene on one side of her genome.
Yeah, and
the way that DNA works is that if you have the dominant gene for brown and the recessive gene for red, then you'll have brown, but you can still pass on the recessive redhead gene. And obviously the dad has to have both red genes, both sides. So yeah, she can totally be a redhead.
Nah.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure you have to have two redheads. It's like
no, how it works.
I don't know.
I'm telling you right now.
That's so not true.
Just like Pokemon, I like that.
Anyway, so Vinny Sims on Letterboxd gives it 1.5 stars, and he said, "If you're trying to fix your sleep schedule, I strongly recommend this film."
Yep.
I can see that. Good. I did have to turn it off and have a nap in the middle.
It's an 84-minute movie. They're like episodes of House of the Dragon are longer.
Yeah. Like. there's just something about it that was just so, like, calming that it was putting me to sleep. So, I don't know.
Maybe I think that what you're looking for is boring.
Yeah. Charlie gives it 2 stars, and he says, "Her hair was so fucking gorgeous, bruh. I loved every minute her hair was on screen."
That's a review I can agree with. 100%.
And finally, PT99 gives it 3.5 stars, and they say, I mean, in my experience, medieval betrothals usually go as planned until the wife inevitably fucks her brother, but maybe I'm jaded. 7 out of 10.
I had to go look. I'm just curious. I feel like the way we feel about this film is how most people feel about it. But the Rotten Tomatoes score is 79% from critics and 75% from the audience. Mm-hmm. So we are the minority on this.
Yeah, but you don't... Mm. That's why you always... Like, this is me saying, highly recommend Letterboxd. If you want to hear what the woke left say, go to Rotten Tomatoes. If you want to see the crazy right-wing shit, go to IMDb.
It's got a 7.1 on IMDb even. Like, even that's not bad.
It's got 3.3 on Letterboxd, which is pretty good, actually.
That's pretty good. Mm. Maybe we're the assholes.
It's incorrect, but it's good for them.
That is wrong.
Or are you scared, simpering jackanapes? Afraid to muss your pretty hair? At least we have hair.
And all our teeth. If he was a wee bit closer, I could love a caber at him, Ken.
All right, so let's get to tenuous recommendations, where we each recommend a piece of media that is linked to today's movie in some way. And as a reminder, if you ever want to see a list of all the recommendations we have made on the show, head over to our Letterboxd page, which is linked on our website. So I'll get us started. My connection is the director, Brenda Chapman, that directed half of this film. I want to recommend a film she did before this that she co-directed with two other people as well. The 1998 DreamWorks animated film, The Prince of Egypt. Have either of you guys seen this?
Not that long ago, actually. I never saw it originally. It was in the last 5 years or so I finally got around to watching it.
Mm-hmm. Brendan, have you seen it?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, talking about how 2D animation still holds up, this is a perfect example of that.
I wish the characters had foreheads, but that's a different story. Go on.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a distinctive style, the character design in this. And, you know, this is a film where DreamWorks kind of wanted to become the next Disney, and they decided to just take a whole bunch of their creative team and make their own epic Disney musical. And I feel like they kind of outdid them even at the time. It was an epic. It's an epic movie. The songs are really good. The animation is stunning. It's surprisingly dark and adult.
Afraid to kill a bunch of firstborn children.
Yeah, it's a obviously adaptation of like the Moses story from the Bible, and it doesn't, you know, shy away from the darker aspects of that story, which is, you know, a whole lot of people getting massacred. So it was really ambitious. I think the DreamWorks animation in the start was doing some super interesting stuff like this. The Road to El Dorado, I think,
good
is really cool.
Movie.
Really
great
cool
film.
Movie. Their Sinbad adaptation has a lot going for it as well. And then kind of
and
Shrek.
And then it went to 3D.
Yeah. And then Shrek kind of put them on a completely different path because of how successful it was. And it is a shame that, you know, they lost this kind of 2D side of their business because they did some amazing stuff there.
It's fair to say they started on rocky footing, though, when their first film was Ants, which was 3D animated.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But again, that was part of stealing. Wasn't it one of the Disney producers or Pixar guys who worked for Pixar, like, went to DreamWorks and took a bunch of their ideas with them? Like, we're going to make this Ants movie before Bug's Life comes out.
Yeah.
I think Small Soldiers might be DreamWorks as well, and that came out around the same time as Toy
movie.
Story. Shark Tale also came out around the same time as Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was messy. And then obviously Shrek is poking direct fun at Disney a lot of places, like Duloc and stuff like that.
I think this, like, I'm not the first person to say this. I know it has a very fervent fan base now. The Prince of Egypt, if you haven't watched it and you're kind of sick of all these 3D animated movies that look exactly the same, definitely go back and give it a go. Brod, what have you got for us?
He's got 9 or 10, right?
No, I don't actually. Oh. Because I 100% forgot until you said Tegan's recommendation, and I started going crazy. I'm thinking I should recommend some really good, like, Emma Thompson films so that Brendan has something to go to. But I'm actually going to go back to I'm going to go back to a film I mentioned earlier as being superior to this. I'm going to highly recommend, if anyone hasn't seen it for any reason, How to Train Your Dragon. Straightforward connection. Craig Ferguson's voice acts in both this, in Brave, and How to Train Your Dragon. It does have a sort of weirdly Scottish accents because they're actually Vikings and not Scottish. But all the adults seem to have Scottish accents, including who plays the dad in that one? What's his name from 300?
Gerard Butler.
Gerard Butler, that's right. And I think David Tennant's got a voice in there as well. Anyway, that is, like, to me, the pinnacle of Pixar's work. Mm-hmm. And still, like, a film that I go back to a lot. I think seeing it for the first time at the cinemas, I saw it in 3D. Mm-hmm. It was right around the time that 3D was a big thing after Avatar. And there were a couple of sequences, the flight sequences, that literally, like, made my stomach drop. Because they were just so effective. The scene where I think the relationship between Hiccup and his dragon friend, whose name I can't remember, all of a sudden, first meet, like that sort of boy and their dog relationship is really good. But then the first time he takes him flying with, like, he's like built like a system to fix his broken tail. Mm-hmm. And it is fucking exhilarating. And the ending is super great as well. That's a fucking great movie. The score is amazing.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah, that John Powell score is just one of the best, like one of the greatest.
It's, there's a reason the film cast for a long, long time used it as their, or a remix of it as their theme song. Because it's just that good.
Did you see the DreamWorks exhibition at the ACMI when it came to-
I did, yes.
And they had like a room set up where, like, with a giant projection where it made you feel like you were flying on the dragon's back.
Toothless, I remember it rightly.
So good. I love How to Train Your Dragon, and I'm so excited that Universal are finally building a theme park around it. So
wait, what? They're building a How to Train Your Dragon theme park?
Well, so-
Like a section?
There, they're going to have a whole How to Train Your Dragon section in the new Dark, I think it's called Dark Universe, their new expansion of Universal Studios. So,
wasn't Dark Universe what they were going to, Universal going to do with their, like, monster films?
It's not Dark Universe. They're calling it something. It's something, but yeah, there's going to be a section about the Universal monsters. Then there's going to be a How to Train Your Dragon and another Harry Potter section as well.
Are they going to do another Harry Potter section?
Yeah, Ministry of Magic.
Oh, okay.
Where you go to church.
The How to Train Your Dragon bit, that will get me there. If I can get, if there's a fucking ride where I get to ride Toothless, count me in.
Yeah. Brendan, we gave you plenty of time. Have you worked out what your connection is yet?
Yes, I thought very long and deep and hard about it, and I looked at the first films that I reviewed that had a redhead in it. And so I'm going to recommend a little film called A Cure for Wellness. Has anyone seen that? I know Paul has.
I have. I think I saw it with you, didn't I?
Yeah.
A Cure for Wellness. I feel like I have, but I can't remember. So how long ago did it come out?
Be about 5-6 years ago now. It's Gore Verbinski.
2016.
No, I haven't seen it.
Okay.
Oh, well, I recommend it because it's a really weird, fun film. It's this story about a top level, like, CEO kind of guy who needs to get away and goes to, like, this, you know, extravagant wellness center, and things go a little awry from there. And it's a bit of a horror, bit of a what would you call it? It's a weird film, but it, like, looks beautiful. Like, even though this guy's going through some, like, crazy shit, you're still looking around and going, oh man, that view, that facility looks amazing. Yeah. So yeah,
it's a stunning movie to look at.
It looks awesome. It's a fun film to watch, and it has Mia Goth, who's redhead, in it. So
is she redheaded in it? I don't remember.
I'm looking at the trailer and I'm not seeing. She's blonde.
I don't think she's redheaded in the film, but I'm pretty, she
she's a redhead in real life is what you're saying.
I think she's a redhead, yeah. I'm pretty sure, right?
God, I don't know.
But googling.
Look,
God, how many Emma Stone films are there you could have chosen from here?
Look,
she's definitely a redhead.
Okay.
It stands.
Find those by the creek, did you? They're nightshade berries. They're poisonous.
If you head over to our website, you'll see that each of us has ranked every body swap film we have reviewed on the podcast. So my question is, where are we all going to put Brave on our lists? All right, so I am going to put it in between Exchange and Surrogates. So right in between the two somewhat sexually charged sci-fi films. I got to shove Brave in between those. Yeah, because I definitely wanted it to. I wanted to put it below Brother Bear. Yeah, it just wasn't as fun as a lot of these films. So yeah, between Exchange and Surrogates.
Yeah, there's some really boring slogs we've watched. I'm finding it really hard to figure out where this fits. I think I'm gonna put it above The Heckler, but below Bad Johnson. So
fuck, that's really low.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't hate this film.
It
was just meh.
But that really irritates me.
The Heckler was fucking terrible.
It was. That's why it's above it. But a movie about a penis coming to life is funnier to me than...
I mean, imagine if they put that in this film.
Yeah, it's if he did, instead of swapping into a bear, like
she turned into a giant penis.
Dick. I think that's why they did some re-scripting, you know,
Brad.
This is my list is obviously very different to yours. I'm gonna put this pretty low. I'm gonna meet you halfway on something here, Paul. I'm gonna see what you think about this.
Yeah.
It's below Turning Red. It's below Heart and Soul. It's below Your Name. It's below Soul. Below Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness, below the Community episode we did, below the Buffy episode, below the Futurama episode, below the Lizzie McGuire episode, above Mama Boy.
Okay.
Which means above I Love You and above Boy Meets Girl.
I think you had so much more fun watching Mama Boy than you.
That's okay. This is my thinking, right? I think Lizzie McGuire is a better body swap film. It at least... As down the line, paint by numbers as that is for a body swap episode, it at least understands what the point of a body swap is. This film totally does not utilize the premise of the mum turning into a bear nearly as well as they should have. Yeah. So it actually goes below an episode of Lizzie McGuire. I can't believe I'm saying that.
Yeah.
But I'll put it above Mama Boy as sort of like the halfway point.
Yeah. Because
I do agree that Mama Boy might be more fun to watch. But Mama Boy is a piece of shit. And so we have to draw a line somewhere.
Next episode, I thought we should be going back into a bit of 80s comedy. We haven't done one of those in a while.
Yes, please.
The era of the body swap. That's the golden age.
Yeah. So there's one that we haven't done yet, which... The title will sound very familiar, but I swear we haven't done this one yet.
The Christmas Switcheroo.
Yeah. So the title of this one is 14 Going on 30.
14 Going on 30?
Wait, is that a sequel to 13 Going on 30 that somehow was made before 13 Going on 30? But wait, I just don't understand that title. 13 Going on 30 has alliteration to it.
Yeah.
Who thought 14 Going on 30 was a good title, a good name?
I don't know. Maybe it's justified in the text of the film. We'll see.
I want to hear this.
In 14 Going...
I'm looking at the artwork for the cover, and I'm in love. It's hilarious.
So in 14 Going on 30, Danny is hopelessly in love with his teacher, Peggy Noble. Of course, she doesn't even notice him while she plans to marry the obnoxious coach, Roy Jackjaw Kelton.
Yeah, she's not a fucking pedophile. What the fuck?
When Daddy's friend Lloyd invents a growth accelerator for fruit and vegetables to solve world hunger, Daddy uses it on himself and as an adult tries to show her Roy's real personality. However, at his first appearance at school as an adult, he's mistaken for someone else. This sounds wild.
It's in Mama Boy territory. It's like a weird scientist sort of like experiment part to this. Oh, I like this.
Yeah. This has all the ingredients to either be amazing or a piece of shit. Or both.
Or both, I'm going to say.
So that's going to be a fun one. So, I mean, Brad, you're welcome to join if you'd like, but I'm sure you're going to just listen.
Until Pixar release another body swap film, I'm sorry, I'm off. I'm not joining you anymore. Okay.
I'm sure you'll be with us soon.
Yeah.
Chances are high.
All right. But yeah, thank you so much for joining us again. What's happening on your show at the moment?
Recently, it depends when's this coming out? That's the question.
Next Thursday.
Oh, okay. By then, most recently we reviewed A League of Their Own Season 1, the Amazon original series, the reimagining of the classic 90s Gina Davis film, which just spoiler alert, really, really enjoyed. I don't know if they've officially said there's a Season 2 yet, but I'm looking forward to that if it comes.
Yeah.
You and I and my brother Liam did a Hot Topic episode where we went through Emmy news and all sorts of stuff we've been watching, which is a bit of fun.
Yeah.
But the next review, which will come out around the same time as your episode, will be our review of Barry Season 3.
Ooh.
Looking forward to that. Says the guy who hasn't finished Season 1. Ooh, sounds good.
I finished Season 1. You finished Season 1. Haven't chosen to continue. But I'm sure your episode will be lovely.
We'll see. I just want to get to the finishing The Rings of Power. I just can't wait to review that fucking show.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to that. That is a show I'm watching, so. All right, well, thanks again for listening, listeners. Until next time, don't be a piece of shit on the ground, DPW. And we've had a few people actually reach out to us, go, what the fuck is DPW? So obviously, if you don't know that, you're also a piece of shit for not listening to all our episodes.
Deep lore.
Yeah. But if you want to find out what a DPW is, listen to our Brother the Pig episode and you'll find out. But until then, review us on iTunes or Spotify. And that way you won't be a piece of shit on the ground, DPW. And I was Paul Mitzi.
Oh, I was Brendan Levi. I'm just so used to Lucy being here and saying her name first.
And I was Broderick Gordis.
Thanks. See you later. Thank you. Bye.
Bye. My Brother the Pig is episode 64.
The Swapcast podcast is recorded in Adelaide, Australia. It's hosted by Paul Mitzi and edited by Brendan Levi and Paul Mitzi. Our theme song was written and performed by John Marco of Too Creative, featuring Lucy Thomas, and recorded at Browntown Studios. Our music bumpers were created by Reggie Parker. Contact him on parkerregmusic@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.